to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM. Phil Williams here on WVNN Right Side Radio. Like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Time now, 4.07 PM. It's almost that go-home time at the end of the week. Some of y'all may have already started packing your bags and hitting the parkway out on 565 or whatever route you take home. Blessings on you. Good luck. And get home safe and have a great weekend. So, listen, I think I need to just welcome one more time our newest team member, Just Love Coffee. And by the way, folks, if you have not been to Just Love Coffee, Just Love Coffee Cafe is way cool. Two locations here in the listening area, one on South Memorial Parkway in Huntsville, the other on Hughes Road in Madison. And Just Love Coffee Cafe not only has amazing coffee and all the usual gourmet blends you can get, but they have a great environment, and they have a menu that is way cool. Like, I was really excited to find out that almost everything comes with waffles, homemade waffles right there on the spot. They got chicken waffles. They've got womlets, which is like an omelet sandwich with waffle bread. They've got, anyway, bottom line is now I'm getting hungry because it's Friday afternoon late. I've already gone through all my right side rations of caffeine and chocolate. But check them out. Just Love Coffee. Just Love Coffee Cafe on Hughes Road in Madison and South Memorial Parkway in Huntsville. I'm excited to have them on the team. All right, so listen, hey, Copper, get my triple dipper sound ready. I think we need to rehash that real quickly. Let me know when you're good to go, because it's time for me to go ahead and remind you of why we're doing what we're doing this. Copper, hit it for me.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
Yeah, three stories you do have to know. So we spent time today formatting the show into three major segments. All right, there's going to be things that come up. There's breaking news that happens in between. I've got a caller. It looks like Casey Wardinski is going to call in at 4:30 to talk about some things that I've already covered a little bit on and give his perspective. But understand this, three stories for the day on the Triple Dipper are, number one is that AOC is literally trying to form a green army on the taxpayer dime. All right, not really a dime. How about $2.8 billion to create 1.5 million government-sponsored climate activists? You heard me right. So that was the whole first segment of the show then, was on AOC's Green Army. The second portion we just finished up is the fact that the Second Amendment is actually on trial. We have a huge landmark case relating to the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms that is going before the Supreme Court of the United States for oral arguments on November the 4th. They just announced recently that we'll take it up. And folks, that's a big, big deal. Because it's rare to get a case like this in front of the Supreme Court. We now have a conservative Supreme Court. And the sense is that we may have something come out of this ruling that could impact the ability to bear arms without infringement by state and local laws all over the nation. Alabama's in a better place than most, but it's going to be neat to see what comes out of this, and I'm hopeful that it goes in the right direction. So, folks, here's the thing. I want to get down to my third piece. The third piece of my Triple Dipper for the day is this. Bureaucrats love mandates, and the press seems to love COVID. Now, okay, there's probably some people out there that go, that's not fair, you can't. What I'm saying is this. I'm not sure what AL.com would do if they couldn't preach death and destruction because they've gotten so immersed in it for the last year and a half. I'm not sure what CNN would do if they couldn't tell you how many people had died or what would happen if the CDC had to actually give you guidance on whether natural antibodies mean something. I mean, it's amazing to me, as we see the numbers beginning to finally wane, and they are, what's going to happen? But right now, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that numbers are waning. Because bureaucrats and liberals love mandates. Classic case in point happening today. Story that just broke in the last hour. The last hour. As I've already had this on my Triple Dipper, bam, more stuff happening, and I'm grabbing it as it comes in. This is off of Newsweek. I'm reading a story on Newsweek published 52 minutes ago that says that literally in California, Governor Newsom, that's right, Governor Newsom, the governor, I feel like kind of like the character from Seinfeld, you know, Newman, when we talk about Newsom. Hello, Newsom. Anyway, Newsom has issued an executive order that all students in California will be vaccinated. It's a mandate of vaccination for school children. The least at-risk population in the United States are school-age children. But the governor of California, in his usual overreaching draconian style, is saying that you will get a vaccine, recognizing, though, that not all age groups are approved for a vaccine yet. So, what does that mean? What happens if you don't want your child vaccinated? Well, 52 minutes ago it came out, students who refuse California's COVID vaccine mandate will be moved to independent studies. That's right, you heard it. They will have to complete an independent study course at home. They will be denied school, which means they will also be denied school sports, which means they'll also be denied school band, which means they'll also be denied any other school activities, and they probably won't be allowed to have a prom, can't participate in student government, or do anything else like take school trips. Because the governor of the state knows what's best for them, and he's everybody's parent. And so what he's going to do right now is he just announced that the first coronavirus vaccine mandate goes into effect immediately. And if you don't get shots, as he said you will, then you will not be allowed to go through the normal course of study with the friends and with the brothers and sisters and cousins that may all go to your school. That's where we are right now in our society. But listen, I'm going to tell you, journalists are not going to know what to do with themselves when the pandemic's over with. I mean, I'm looking at an article right now that came off a National Review, and it came off this morning. Yep, October 1st, 2021 at 6:30 a.m. I was already working this morning at around 6:15. And so the media are grossly distorting the reality of the pandemic. And it goes on to say that as the COVID-19 pandemic in the U.S. is ebbing, you'd never know it from the headlines. Nothing but bad news, accurate or not, is what sells. And in the case of COVID-19, it also supports a lot of journalistic prejudices. And so right now, the 7-day moving average of new COVID cases and hospitalizations, which peaked and started to decline in early September, nationwide, COVID-19 hospitalization rates have decreased by 17% in the past 2 weeks. Only 19 states had any increase at all, and many of those were small. The remaining 31 states and the District of Columbia saw hospitalization rates decline. Now that's also, by the way, happening in Alabama. So right now, I'm sitting here looking at an article coming off of AL.com just this morning, updated. I found this one right around lunchtime before I came on the air, 11:33 a.m. when the story came out. Alabama Department of Public Health has modified its back-to-school guidance. The change now allows students to have less quarantine time. And they're also saying, by the way, that cases are down. So the ADPH, the Public Health School Dashboard, listed 2,487 cases this week across the entire state. Keep in mind, that's 2,487 cases. And I need to find out how many students we actually have enrolled in schools in the state of Alabama, but it's massive. All right, so this is a very small fraction. Nonetheless, there's 2,487 cases this week, which is down from 3,800 the previous week, down from 6,300 in the week of September 17th. And due to the decline in those cases, places like Baldwin County, Dothan City, Gulf Shores, Houston County, Leeds City, Saraland City, and Shelby County have all removed their mask mandates altogether. And some have decided to extend their rules a little bit and soften them up. But the State Department of Public Health in Alabama is saying, all right, here's some new guidance. We're only going to require recommend 8 days of quarantine. But they do want you to have a negative test. So 8 days of quarantine with a negative test. Although, here we go again, they added a stipulation. They will not allow you to use a at-home COVID test. Results of an at-home COVID test are not accepted. So you have to go to a doctor, get tested, get the result, be allowed to come back to school 2 days earlier. God almighty. All right, folks, listen, we're going to take a short break right now, come back, and I'm going to wrap that piece up a little bit. But I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that are happening, including what did your own senator say? Senator Tommy Tuberville. And on top of that, one of my favorite clips that I found recently, Rand Paul literally destroys Javier Becerra, the Senate during the, the Health and Human Services Secretary. All right, we'll talk about Tuberville and Rand Paul when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, coming down to the end of a week. It's 4:24 p.m. on Friday, October 1st. Some of y'all getting ready for that go-home time, and blessings on you as you hit the road. Hey, listen, you have had elected officials going at this vaccine mandate, and I want to make sure that you know that there are people out there trying to do the good deed and making sure that the government understands that while you might be pro-vax, it doesn't mean you have to be pro-mandate. Just because, like, for instance, me, I'm not anti-vax, not at all. Somebody wants to get that shot, go talk to your doctor, make a wise decision, best you can for you and your dependents, and do what you think is necessary. But for that same time and same token, do not come at us with federal overreach, or like in the case of California, with massive state overreach, and start mandating vaccines on people who have a right to make their own healthcare decisions. It's unreal. Well, listen, your own Senator Tommy Tuberville recently took to task the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, about the department limiting access to the monoclonal antibody treatments. And Tuberville wore him out. And he said, during the committee hearing, Tuberville pressed him on his decision to implement restrictive policies. If you remember, we talked about this just the other day, is that monoclonal antibodies are one of the treatments, one of the preferred treatments, by the way, for medical providers to be able to alleviate the symptoms of someone who has received, gotten COVID. And so here we are seeing all of a sudden, oh, guess what? The federal government decided it's going to tell states how much they can get. And Becerra came out and even said in a hearing questioned by Tuberville that, your state ordered 45,000 doses, and that went far too quickly. Your state wasn't the only one, so they put some new restrictions in place. And Tuberville stressed the importance of needing to have those readily available treatments to prevent mass influx of new COVID-19 cases placing a strain on the system. And he said, I heard you say, equity. This is Tuberville talking. And I continue to hear everybody talk about equity. And I believe in that, okay, but we need to save people's lives. And we can't shut down Alabama or some of these other states simply for the fact that we might not be taking as many vaccines as you like. We cannot let people die, and especially teachers. You know, we're telling them to go back to school and they want to go teach, but we can't do that. So I would hope that we would not get political with this. Red states, blue states, it shouldn't be about that. It should be about everybody. If they need it, they get it. And we just need more to be prepared. Well, Rand Paul took Xavier Becerra to task in the same hearing. And it's one of my favorite clips. And in the time we have left, I got to play this for you. Copper, go ahead and get clip three. Are you ready with that? Yeah, three is ready. Go ahead, Copper, play clip three.
People and say, well, you know what? It looks like my immunity is as good as the vaccine or not. And in a free country, maybe I ought to be able to make that decision. Instead, you've chosen to travel the country calling people like Jonathan Isaac and others, myself included, flat earthers. We find that very insulting, goes against the science. Are you a doctor or a medical doctor?
I've worked over 30 years on health policy.
You're not a medical doctor. Do you have a science degree? And yet you travel the country calling people flat earthers who have had COVID, looked at studies of millions of people, and made their own personal decision that their immunity they naturally acquired is sufficient. But you presume somehow to tell over 100 million Americans who have survived COVID that we have no right to determine our own medical care. You alone are on high, and you've made these decisions, a lawyer with no scientific background, no medical degree. This is an arrogance coupled with an authoritarianism that is unseemly and un-American. You, sir, are the one ignoring the science. The vast preponderance of scientific studies, dozens and dozens, show robust, long-lasting immunity after COVID infection. Even the CDC does not recommend measles vaccine if you have measles immunity. The same was true for smallpox. But you ignore history and science to shame the flat earthers, as you call them. You should be ashamed of yourself and apologize to the American people for being dishonest about naturally acquired immunity.
Amazing clip. Something that had to be said. Something that had to be said, because if you think about it, Rand Paul himself is a medical practitioner. He's a doctor. And Xavier Becerra, who's in charge of deciding whether or not the state gets monoclonal antibodies, is calling everybody flat earthers if they don't believe his notions of what is good for their bodies or not. And folks, that's called bureaucracy. That's what happens when federal government is filled with people that think they understand you better than you understand you, who think they know what's good for you better than you know what's good for you, who think, like in the case of Gavin Newsom in California just today, that he knows better for what's for your kids than what you think is good for your kids. And folks, that kind of stuff's got to stop. Got to stop. That kind of federal overreach is un-American, in my opinion, and it is certainly not something that is good for the general order of this nation. It's causing more division. It's creating entire backlashes of people left and right. It's polarizing our society, and it must come to a stop. Hey, we get back from this. Casey Wardinsky is going to go ahead and call in. I'm going to talk to him about his thoughts on those red flag laws in the NDAA and what it does to military gun ownership. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
This is News Talk 77.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We are winding up a day here, but I got a caller coming on that we've had on multiple times. Casey Wardinsky, retired Army colonel, service in the Pentagon, working in the upper reaches of Army staff as the Assistant Secretary of the Army, Deputy Secretary. Casey, come on the air with me and tell me your position was Deputy Secretary of the Army for Reserve and Manpower Affairs. Is that correct?
Phil, it was Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs.
I apologize. I had that scrambled. I was sitting here looking at some notes that I was coming on to talk with you about. But Casey, you're also running for Congress, and your experience really led me to, you know, to be glad to have you on the show today, because we just saw the National Defense Authorization Act passed, which I explained earlier in the show is basically the funding for the U.S. military. But as per normal, there is too much stuff packed in there. It's things that don't necessarily deal with funding, one of which really bothered me, is what they call red flag provisions for gun ownership of military personnel in their off-duty capacity. So these folks who have, you know, probably better than normal skills training in terms of gun use and gun ownership now have red flag provisions written into the NDAA that could have their guns confiscated if they just are accused of something. Your thoughts on that?
I think this whole bill, Phil, is really laying the foundation to move a lot of these ideas into federal law and apply to all Americans. This NDAA, I think about 18,000 words, I bet you 60% of them pertain to social issues, from bringing critical race theory to bear in the military to these red flag provisions and creating new protected classes, gender identity, sexual orientation. It's got very little to do with defense, and a lot of sort of a first run at changing America by first changing the military.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And I had a whole segment on the show the other day, Casey, that, you know, that too often the military is used as like a petri dish for liberals to sort of generate their progressive experiments. The military is theirs. They see it as their toy or their experimentation station, and they do these things constantly, and they mix them into the actual funding authorization for the military personnel. I'm sure you saw that in your position recently working in the Pentagon.
Oh, absolutely. One of the first issues we had to come to grips with was the transgender issue as it applied to the military. And we spent a whole lot of time on that at the assistant secretary, secretary, and chief of staff level. And, you know, of course, Biden came in and broadened the aperture on all of that.
Well, he did, and the Biden administration has made it very clear that they have an anti-gun bias. Today, I was also doing a segment, I don't know if you heard any of it, but a segment on the fact that there's a major potential landmark case coming up before the Supreme Court of the United States in about 30 days, and the Biden administration has weighed in with its own brief asking to expand the capabilities of the suit in order to reduce Second Amendment rights and provisions in state laws. It's a never-ending battle. But I am sure though that you have seen any number of bureaucratic pieces that sound good on paper, but do they really wind up fleshing out in real life? I saw them as a troop leader, literally. I mean, I remember one time, Casey, having to do a young officer's OER, officer evaluation report, for those who don't know, and I was having to rate his time in the war zone. He was a great leader, but I had to delete some of the commentary on his war zone leadership, which is what he's in the Army for, to make sure I included that he was fully compliant with sexual harassment and EEO policies. And that just pretty much infuriated me, but it was part of the world in which we live.
They give you so many words, and you've got to check all these blocks to make sure your subordinate, you know, is seen in the right light. And so, yeah, you've got to screen out the more important attributes, just as you mentioned.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was conversing back and forth with Chad, who works in your campaign earlier. He said, and I didn't even catch this, is it true that the NDAA also takes a step towards D.C. statehood? What's your thoughts on that?
It does. There's a specific section that addresses moving the D.C. Guard from the president's control to the mayor and making her commander-in-chief. It's ridiculous.
The mayor?
It's kind of deep in the document. I think it's section 1067. And during the riots last year, of course, since 1888, the D.C. Guard had always reported to the President of the United States, and from him to Secretary of Defense and then the Secretary of the Army, in those days, of course, Secretary of War. And it was so organized to provide a capability in D.C. to protect the seat of government. With this act, it moves that guard from the president to the mayor. Well, and it likens it to being a governor. Well, there's no way D.C. needs to have a governor. I don't even think it needs a mayor. It should go back to having a commissioner reporting to Congress like it did in the 70s, because we've seen no end of trouble from those mayors. And this move to statehood, this is another step in that direction. It never needs to happen. They would have a liberal congressperson and two liberal senators permanently. And that bunch in D.C. is already well represented. They're the bureaucracy, and they make sure the interpretation and regulation of law is as liberal as it can possibly be.
Oh, that's exactly right. And I tell you what, we can break that down into almost two different conversations. I mean, the first is the fact that the mayor, this particular mayor, having access to her National Guard would be, I mean, this is the same mayor who is anti-police.
Yep.
The crime has shot up through the roof since she took office. Who paints Black Lives Matter down the center of streets and names entire sections of town, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, courts and whatever else, and yet locks down the average citizen from having a life right now. And then she's going to have access to the National Guard, one more asset at her disposal to do the things she wants done. Absolutely wrong. But I agree with you on the other aspect of this. The second part of that conversation is we do not need a 51st state. We don't need two more. And a typically very liberal, here I am a conservative, and you too, we don't want also a state being formed in an overly liberal section of the country and throwing off the balance of power in our U.S. Senate. That's just absolutely not where we need to be.
You know, as a backdrop, Phil, remember the the military chiefs, Milley, Chief Staff of the Army, at that time McConville. Everything was about optics. On January 6th, it was about optics, and last June during the riots in D.C., it was about optics, and they did not like the optics of the active Army being brought in under the Insurrection Act to quell the riots around the country, and particularly in D.C. Milley had moved two brigades, one from Fort Bragg, one from Drum, down to Belvoir and Andrews to be ready, but they cautioned repeatedly against using them. Well, we did have the D.C. Guard to rely on. With this move, there won't be a D.C. Guard for the federal government to rely on to protect the seat of government in Washington, and you'll almost be forced immediately to bring active forces to bear. And, of course, with the kind of leaders we've got today, you know, that's going to be a torturous process. They're going to be cautioning the president against it, doing everything they can to make it a drawn-out process, and meanwhile, mayhem will ensue.
Yeah, and I agree with that assessment. And for those who don't know, the National Guard is typically what's called a Title 32 status, and with the exception of D.C. that we have immediate access to from the federal authorities, most states you have to go through their governor or you have to federalize their troops, one or the other. And unless you have a state-to-state compact that says we'll loan you our National Guard when you need them, there's going to wind up being an issue federalizing or activating National Guard troops. And if you put them under a mayor and give her the status of being a governor, it's even worse.
Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. Guard, and the mayor involved herself last June, calling the governors of those two states and say, hey, don't send your guards to support the D.C. Guard. I won't deputize them. And so they didn't. And so the compact broke down thanks to her efforts. January 6th rolls around, and she was offered all kinds of support from the Department of Defense. She refused it, saying, we don't need your help. We don't like the optics. And, of course, you know, the problems ensued with the lack of crowd control and the lack of forces that were capable of dealing with the events at the Capitol. So she's always at ground zero doing mischief and undermining the federal government, and particularly President Trump in this case. No way should she have control of the D.C. Guard. I can't believe 135 Republicans voted for this thing.
Well, I can't either, and I'm glad to hear that most of our delegation did not, although a few did. I think Mike Rogers voted for it, and I guess because he felt like he had to, because he's a senior-ranking member on the House Armed Services Committee. And then Jerry Carl also voted for it, and I'm sure because it was bringing two new battleship construction pieces to the Austell Boatyards down there in his district. Either way, those are not what I would call statesmanlike decisions. They needed to look at the broader bill and the kind of things that you and I have just been talking about. Hey, Casey, thanks so much for your time. I want to ask you, though, one more thing before you go, if you don't mind. Since the last time you and I had a chance to talk on the air, General Milley has had an opportunity to testify. He and General McKenzie and the SecDef have all had a chance to testify before the House and the Senate. In hearing their testimony, one of the things that struck me was they were adamant that they had indeed advised the President of the United States to maintain a troop presence in Afghanistan so that we would have a forward presence opportunity in that area of the operations. But what are your thoughts on their testimony? Any quick couple-minute thoughts here on that?
I thought it was really telling, but really reinforced what I'd already seen in the Pentagon. These are political actors. Particularly General Milley, you know, the amount of time he spent getting interviewed by authors of books to be critical of the president and make himself available to liberals, you know, was really telling. He said his job as a general wasn't to, you know, weigh in on political decisions, and yet that's really what he did at every turn. And he brought discredit on the military. It's a shame.
Well, I agree. And I remember when I was leaving, I worked in what's called a SCIF. For those who don't know, that's a secure compartmental facility in the basement of the Pentagon for a while. And when I left there, I had to be what's called read off. And one of the last things the lady said to me as I was being read off was, if you ever write a book, we have to read it first. And I said, I understand. And so General Milley, who knows far more than this, you know, this guy ever could have known, who's access to every military secret there is literally in a position where he's out there giving interviews with people that are writing partisan books about the Trump administration and others. And I found that to be pretty enlightening, but also pretty sickening at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, Casey, thanks for your time today. It's Casey Wardinski, who is running for Congress for the seat that Mo Brooks is vacating to run for U.S. Senate. And Casey, wish you the best of luck and look forward to having you on the show again sometime soon.
Thanks very much, Phil. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, folks, we're moving towards that short break. We'll come back and wrap up the day. Everybody's getting their go-home bags ready, car keys in hand. I know it. Traffic's already picking up out there on 565 and going down the parkway, so you got to be careful. We'll come back and get you on your way. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. 4:51 p.m. moving down towards the final moments of the week. And listen, it has been a good one. It has been a full week. I hope you guys have enjoyed the Triple Dipper, the way that we're sort of structuring the show a little bit, kind of guide the show through. Triple Dipper for today, three stories you got to know. So when you're standing around that water cooler, you know, at Talladega watching the races this weekend or something else, if somebody brings up politics, you could say, hey, I heard that AOC is trying to get a green army full of liberal climate conservation activists. Yep, that's in the $3.5 trillion bill. Or you can also tell them that you heard today the Second Amendment's actually coming up for trial. That's right. The Supreme Court of the United States is going to take up a Second Amendment case that could be a landmark case across the nation. And the other one is this. Bureaucrats and politicians, liberal politicians, love vaccine mandates, but they're not working out for them everywhere, by the way. Breaking news even today was that in Alabama, COVID cases are going down. Yes, they are. That mask mandates are coming off of schools in Alabama. However, breaking news just about an hour and a half ago, Governor Gavin Newsom in California has issued a statewide vaccine mandate for all students, and they will not be allowed to attend regular school if they do not get the vaccine. That's going to be an amazing shift. We'll see how the lawsuits work out on that one. On top of that, though, we also had the other day, we talked about the fact that the healthcare industry is being ransacked, in a sense, by the fact that there are any number of folks who don't want to get the vaccine or who resist the notion of mandates in general who are going to lose their job in New York State. We've already seen hospitals that have had to shut down their elective surgeries. One hospital had to stop doing labor and delivery because they're losing staff over vaccine mandates. Well, apparently there was just a stay. I believe this happened this morning. That a federal district court has issued a stay or enjoined the vaccine mandate loss of job provision in New York State for healthcare workers. I hope that's true. I don't have the story in front of me, but I got that secondhand. And then the other piece of breaking news, it's two pieces actually. One is that here in Alabama, Governor Ivey, I was looking at a picture a minute ago on Twitter during the break, Governor Ivey did indeed sign the prison legislation so that Alabama can move forward on the construction of two new 4,000-bed prisons. And, of course, the liberals are freaking out. Some of the usuals on AL.com can't understand why we'd ever go down this road. Well, what are you going to do with them? Why would you leave them in the inhumane facilities that we have right now? I remember when I toured St. Clair County Correctional Facility, that place needs to close down, and luckily it is one of the ones that is slated to likely close. And so, folks, that bill was signed today after a week of special session by the legislature. Long story. I won't go into it all right now in the final minutes of the day, but it took forever for this to come about, and I'm glad that it finally did. I hate that it involved spending new monies, and I do believe they could have done it differently had they taken action in the past, but they didn't. But nonetheless, we are there now with a solution. And so Governor Ivey just signed that bill in the last hour. And then the other piece of breaking news is this. Jen Psaki just admitted, this story came out within the last hour, Jen Psaki admitted that after negotiations today with House Democrats, that President Biden is not likely to get his $3.5 trillion spending proposal. Now, let me caveat that. She said not likely to get his full $3.5 trillion spending package, that, quote, compromise is necessary and inevitable. Glad to hear it. There are already progressives out there that are shouting and crowing about the fact that they appear to have clout. They appear to have power. Well, they may have some power, but the reason why they're saying that is because instead of canceling the bill, Pelosi agreed to put it off for further negotiation, meaning they think they've got an opportunity to put something together that will then go upstairs and actually pass. It doesn't get them past, though, the fact that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are upstairs, and they're getting sick of being beat up on by their so-called brethren and sistren in the Democrat Party. So we've still got a lot of infighting left to do. Nancy Pelosi is doing her usual hoodoo and some kind of kabuki dance among the Democrat caucus, trying to get them on board to sign this bill, because this is Biden's domestic agenda. This is all of it. La-di-da-di, everybody got to get on board. Otherwise, Nancy Pelosi is going to be mad. Well, President Biden has got his entire domestic agenda riding on two bills right now. And they're going to have egg on their... Well, they already have egg on their face. Thank you very much. So whereas progressives are saying, oh, big news, we got the bill delayed, we can keep negotiating. All right, fine. In the meantime, Republicans are going, yep, we're getting one step closer to 2022's midterms. Well, it's... 2022 midterms are looking like they're shaping up the right way for Republicans. And I mean in every capacity. I think we're going to see down ballot races from the federal side all the way down to the state being a big doings for Democrats or for Republicans, I mean. But folks, I'm just telling you. I said it today. in my opening monologue. Conservatives, you have got to be willing to go neck deep, all right? You've got to be willing to go neck deep because we are facing issues in our nation right now that go well and beyond anything we have ever faced in terms of the infringement upon constitutional liberties, upon spending beyond that which we've ever had in front of us before. And the idea that we would sit idly by and let it happen, not on my watch. We can't do it. Folks, I encourage you, as you go into the weekend right now, begin giving consideration, who will I support? Who is a true conservative running for a race that is on any ballot that I'm going to vote for? I don't care if it's for dog catcher, your local school board, your mayors, anybody who's running for Congress or U.S. Senate, your governors. Who's going to be in your state legislature? Look up the ticket. Who's going to be in D.C. under your or presiding over your district? And folks, I'm just saying, we cannot afford to sit idly by and watch the usual take place. We have got to get unusual. We need conservatives who are willing to go neck deep, who are willing to get out there and get in the fray, because so much is on the line. And we have time right now. Candidates don't qualify for another few months. There's still time if you want to even get in a race. And I'll be glad to talk to anybody who wants to. But folks, I'm just telling you, it's big doings. And right now, there's a lot on the line. But I am hopeful because I know what kind of audience this is, and there's a whole lot of us out there. Like Charlene always says, there's a whole lot more of us than there are of them. All right, folks. Right Side Radio, another week gone. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. You guys have a great weekend. We love you. We'll see you again on Monday. Take care.